Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette. Sitting in for Aaron this week is Weirdbeard.
Welcome to episode 160 of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Weird?
I'm doing awesome, Sean. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Maybe we should explain why Weird is doing the podcast instead of Aaron.
I think they might be able to guess.
No, nobody knows that Aaron lives in Florida and is fleeing from the hurricane.
Yeah, coastal Florida, too.
The east coast of Florida.
Yeah, the one that's going to get hit.
Unless the hurricane decides to change its course at last minute and go beat up New Orleans or something.
Yeah, or start running out of steam fast. That sometimes happens, too.
Right, it's going to hang a left-hand turn, and it's going to go right into, say, Venezuela. Honestly, if a Cat 5 hurricane hit Venezuela, it'd do like a buck 05 damage.
It'd do like $250 million worth of improvements.
You know, socialism's already got the place. So, anything new going on in your world since anybody has spoken to you last?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I was up in Maine for Labor Day. That was a lot of fun. That's the extent of it.
I bet Maine is only nice at that time of the year, because I can't imagine Maine in the wintertime. Oh, my goodness.
It's all I know. I mean, I guess you, California boy, now living in North Carolina. I mean, Pennsylvania probably was a little bit better, but not that, you know, but not that much better.
Well, I knew it was time for me to leave Pennsylvania, and I'd been in the winter too long. When I went out to start my car, warm the engine up, I'm wearing, you know, long sleeve shirt, long pants, no long underwear. I had long hair at the time, and it was still wet from the shower. And I go out and I start the car up, and I'm like, oh yeah, starting to warm up around here. And the car has a thermometer in it, and it said 31 degrees. I said, oh, it's time for me to go. If I'm starting to think that below freezing is warming up, I'm out.
Oh, definitely. I had one point where I got off a fishing boat in the dead of winter. The harbor was frozen over, and so we were cracking ice through the harbor, and I sat down in my car, and I was trying to back it out, and I just had to, I'm like, something wrong with my clutch, something wrong with my clutch, and everything, ba-bump! And I realized that my tires were frozen to the parking lot.
Yeah, that's, no, sorry. I'll stay down here where I belong.
Yeah, don't worry. When I retire, it's going to be to a place that, but my wife and I have both decided, yeah, it's going to be a place that doesn't have snow.
Let's remind everybody that on October 1st, I'm going to be choosing a member from Gunblog Variety Cast Radio Group on Facebook. One of those people, the one that I select randomly by random draw, I don't know, I'll figure something out, is going to get a free Cat tourniquet, a belt carrier, and courtesy of Filster Holsters, a Filster flat pack to carry it. All you got to do is join the Gunblog Variety Cast Radio Group on Facebook, and you're in the running.
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of the Gunblog Variety Cast Radio. From Golden Saber to range rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
Well, let's get on with the show.
Beth is on assignment and will return next week.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to GunblogVarietyCast.com and click on the Donate or the Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Man accused of breaking into North Carolina rehab centers, sexually assaulting patients.
This is one of those grim ones, Sean, so watch your radio voice.
Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. A man was arrested Tuesday in connection with two sexual assaults involving patients at two Charlotte rehab centers. Suspect 31 is charged with three counts of second-degree sex offense and two counts of first-degree breaking and entering. The first incident happened last Thursday at the Charlotte Health and Rehab Center on the 1700 block of Todaville Road. Police say the man was found in the victim's room and said he was a family member. He then ran away from the center, but a witness was able to get a description of the man and his vehicle. The second assault happened on Friday at the Bryan Center Health and Rehab on the 5900 block of Redmond Road. The victim told police she was asleep when she was awoken by a man in her bed. The man she described matched the description from the first case. Investigators say evidence gathered led to naming suspect as the suspect. He is currently in the custody of the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office.
Ugh, God. What a charmer, going to a rehab center. So I assume this is a physical rehab as opposed to like a drug rehab center. So these are people that are mobility impaired because they've broken limbs and had surgery and stuff, right?
Right, that or old folks, basically.
Yeah, or a combination of the two. Ugh. So tell me about this choir boy, Sean.
Carry concealed weapon, misdemeanor, class 2. Reckless driving, misdemeanor, class 2. Resisting officer, misdemeanor, class 2. Common law robbery attempted, felon, class H. Possessed with intent to sell, schedule 2, felon, class H. 2 counts, receiving stolen vehicle, felon, class H. Larceny of a motor vehicle, felon, class H. And possession of a firearm by a felon, felon, class G.
So this is either the first time he's ever gone into the molesting people, or this is the first time he's gotten caught.
Probably the first time he's gotten caught.
Yeah.
It gets even more interesting. Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office maintains an arrest record registry. So if somebody's been arrested in Mecklenburg County, you can look that up. Well, in making sure that I was looking at the right person, I looked in Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office to take a look at the birth date to match the birth date, because the guy doesn't have a really super uncommon name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I noticed that he had been arrested in, I think it was March. I don't have it in front of me, but he'd been arrested earlier this year on a felon in possession of a firearm charge. So he's awaiting trial for another felon in possession. And while he's awaiting trial for that, he's out causing more trouble.
Ugh. Yeah, so much for keep your nose clean, kid.
Yeah, pretty much. Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
You've heard Aaron talk about this before, but let me remind you. We're taking a survey of our listeners. We'd like you to participate. It will help us to learn more about you. No matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to the show, please take a few minutes and visit our website at gunblogvarietycast.com. You'll find the listener survey link at the top of the right sidebar. It's also in the show notes right at the top. And you can complete the survey anonymously. Thanks.
What do you do when a Cat 5 hurricane is barreling down on you in Florida? Well, if you're Miguel, you fret that you don't have enough propane because you've used it all up smoking ribs and brisket. Well, there's more than that. But let's let Miguel tell you about it.
Hello, heathens. By the time you hear this, I am either alive or Miami has been erased from the map by Hurricane Irma. I am betting on option number one as the forecast tracks are slowly moving towards east and may miss South Florida altogether. Again, I'm going to get into prepper territory, which is not my domain by far, so please take my tale as just a bit of info and not as rules to follow. Hey, when we heard about Irma becoming serious, we did a quick check on food and saw we had plenty, at least 2 weeks of meals. Drinking water was also okay, a gallon per person per day for a week at least, plus we have reserves in 5-gallon containers to be filled from the filter water from tap. And that's not unusual, even though it is very weird. If not, I don't recall South Florida water supply ever failing during a hurricane. We always had it. So that is for water. Now, power-wise, we have a small generator that runs like a champ and has been our magical word. Believe it or not, we bought that thing after Wilma, and ever since we have not lost power for more than 30 minutes, tops, and or even been hit by a hurricane. I admit that I had not tested in a long time, so it took a little bit of cajoling, but I got it working. Gasoline was bought on Monday. All vehicles fuel and 20 extra gallons for the generator bought. Now, where I screwed up was with propane. I had been smoking ribs and other pork delicacies and was almost out of propane. One bottle had gone out and the other was just about. Even though I have a camping stove that works great and I got the little bunch of small propane, green propane tanks that come with it, I thought it would be really nice to have the smoker going. You know, you actually can use it not only for that, but for baking and other stuff. So, I set out to get refills or swaps. The wife, chime in and say, go ahead and, while you're out, go fetch your extra gallon of milk and a case of bottled water just because. Man, was I a fool stepping outside. Hey, by this time, the governor had declared a state of emergency, which triggers, among many other things, people introducing their minds. Traffic had become snarled. The lines to get propane were brutal. A friend of mine had to wait for over an hour to get his tanks refilled, and he was able to wait inside of his vehicle with the AC on. Me? I was supposed to stand in line under the sun with my screwed up back. Did I forget to mention it was hot? It was upper 90s with a heat index way passing the hundreds. So no, I did not get propane. The risk reward in this case was not worth it. My history of heat-related injuries superseded any benefit of having a working smoker. I decided to go back home, and that was another scary story. Mind you, South Florida drivers are not the best normally, but under stress, they are downright berserkers. That is not the issue, because, you know, people in fear do behave stupidly. The issue is that I found myself getting angry when I know damn well that it would not help me get home any faster. I had to catch myself from doing the yelling thing and the middle finger pointing thingy at the other drivers. Instead, I took a deep breath, was polite when needed, and let the idiots do their thing unimpeded. I made it home safely. A simple trip, not more tolerant on the 2 miles, took me just a bit of an hour. We must realize that stupidity is contagious when mass fear is making its rounds. And if we don't pay attention to our behavior, we will join the stupid tribe. So I'll leave you with 2 small pieces of advice. Anything fuel, never let it fall under half your usual amounts. Top off as soon as possible. When in the middle of a high-stress situation, step back and reassess. Hell, breathe deep and count to 10. That is all. I hope to have a segment for next week. Listeners from Florida, stay safe and pray for the best. Irma is not our first hurricane, but she is a scary b-. Have fun. Talk to you guys later.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.
I drove 86,000 miles in the last 2 years. Sooner or later, I'm going to be the first guy on the scene of an accident where someone's dying and I'm his only hope. What medical gear should I have with me when this happens? Friend of the show and frequent guest, ambulance driver, Kelly Grayson, is here to explain what a lay rescuer should have, and more importantly, what he shouldn't. I'd like to welcome paramedic, medical trainer, internet raconteur, and all-around fun guy, the ambulance driver, Kelly Grayson. How are you doing, Kelly?
Oh, man, I'm capital. The rain has passed. We managed to stay out of the path of the bad weather, although at, you know, work, I can't avoid it. So we managed to dodge Hurricane Harvey, and I'm back to the normal routine for right now anyway, until I get back to work.
Kelly, I drive a lot. I put about 85,000 miles on my car in the last 2 years.
Jeez.
It's inevitable that I'll be the first responder at a bad car crash eventually. So what medical equipment do I really want in my car?
Well, first of all, you need to practice the paramedic level skill of not noticing those things. So the guy you see with the stare fixed firmly ahead and his hand up to the side of the face driving by the accident, no, that's an off-duty paramedic. You need to cultivate that ability. But if you really want to stop, you know, things that you should carry in your car, probably some basic wound care supplies and CPR pocket mask. That's basically it. Some stuff to stop bleeding and stuff to do CPR with. And that really encompasses all of it. You can be as complex or as well supplied as you want to be with that first aid kit. It all comes down to air goes in and out, blood goes round and round. Any variation on that theme is a problem that you need to fix. So focus on those two things, and that's all that any prudent layperson would do in that situation, and you'll do the patient some good.
So as a lay rescuer, what am I actually able to do?
As a lay rescuer, you can do CPR interventions, you can do rescue breathing, positioning a patient, chest compressions. You can do basic wound care, things like stopping life-threatening bleeding and bandaging, that sort of thing. Actually, lay people are not required to do anything. There's the Good Samaritan laws actually protect you if you respond to an emergency where you're not legally required to do so. And the laws protect you because you technically do not have a duty to act. So you don't have to pull over. You're just doing so because you're being a Good Samaritan. But in those situations, all that would be expected of any layperson, the way those laws read liability-wise, is what would a prudently trained layperson do in a similar situation. The things that you can do, cardiopulmonary resuscitation. We teach it to civilians and lay people all the time. Wound care, that is becoming a big push lately, making effective wound care options, a BLS layperson intervention. Things like tourniquets especially, and now hemostatic dressings. Those kind of things are easily applied. Basically, if you want to boil it down, things that you can put on someone you're good to go. Things that need to be put in someone, you're delving into murky territory that is the province of medical professionals. So if it's something you put on a wound or put on a limb, that's fine. If you're starting to stick things into the human body and pierce the body and go into orifices that you have no business being in, if you're not legally married or dating that person, then you probably are shouldn't be doing those things. But that's it. Yeah, if it goes on the body, good to go. Goes in the body, not so much.
Can you give me a list maybe of some equipment that would be prudent for me to have? You've already said tourniquet.
Yeah.
And you've already said hemostatic dressing. Could you explain what that means?
What I recommend for most lay people as a quick trauma kit, and I'm not talking about a first aid kit with Band-Aids and Neosporin and gauze pads and things like that. I'm talking about the things that you need to save a life, are the things that I put in our shooter self-care kits when I talk about that class. And that class is specifically designed for layperson shooters who may encounter a penetrating trauma injury at the range or out in the field or what have you, or God forbid, in a gunfight. And basically it consists of personal protective equipment. You need gloves. You need eye protection. If this happens at the range, first thing I would tell everyone is leave your eye pro on. Don't take it off. It also protects you from bloody spatters. And you are much more likely to catch an infectious disease through eye spatters than you are through a cut in your skin or handling blood with ungloved hands or anything like that. Mucous membranes are a great route for infections. So barrier protection for infectious diseases and infectious liquids. You need some bandaging supplies. Simple 4x4 gauze pads. Some roller gauze like Cling or Curlix that comes in a bandage roll that allows you to affix a dressing like a 4x4 pads or a larger, more absorbent dressing to a wound. A tourniquet. One of the committee on tactical combat casualty care approved tourniquets, such as the CAT or the soft T tourniquet. Probably a hemostatic dressing. Those are, you can buy those in sporting goods stores now. You can go buy Quick Clot or something like that at Academy Sports. That's really it. I would probably also throw in a chest seal if it happened to be a sucking chest wound, which are not nearly as common as you might think, but even in combat situations. But a simple chest seal like a Halo seal or the SAM seal or a Asherman chest seal would work fine. A hemostatic dressing, to explain what it is a absorbent dressing that is impregnated with some type of compound that promotes clotting. And there's a couple of different types out there. Probably the two most common ones are Quick Clot. And Quick Clot is impregnated with a clay type compound called kaolin. And kaolin is one of the oldest clotting agents that we know of, and it works systemically. The nice thing about kaolin is that once it's applied to actively bleeding wound, that chemical compound gets into the bloodstream and starts working on activating clotting factors in your body, and it works systemically. So we're typically putting it on the bleeder, but it can also enhance clotting in other areas that we're not directly putting pressure on. I don't know if that effect is all that pronounced, so I wouldn't count on that, but one of the earliest clotting tests that they did in laboratories was called a kaolin test, and I would add kaolin to blood samples and find out how quickly it would clot. And then the other type is some type of chitosan dressing, and chitosan is a protein derived from shrimp shells. It has been sufficiently refined and purified so that even people with shellfish and iodine allergies can use it safely. It's typically a little more expensive, though, but chitosan dressings and things like Celox and some of the other ones out there are basically absorbent dressings that have this protein matrix that allows platelets to attach to it and start forming the scaffolding of a building clot. There are some other ones out there that use aluminosilicate salts as a absorbent and drying agent and that sort of things. But probably the most common one are some type of chitosan dressing or quick clot, which uses kaolin. And both of them are designed to give you more bang for the buck. They're supposed to slow down the bleeding process, not only with the direct application, but by actually promoting wound clotting.
Now, don't those things burn your skin or something like that? Aren't they dangerous in some way?
No, not for a long, long time. The early application or the early formulation of quick clot used a mineral called zeolite. And zeolite, when exposed to liquid, caused an exothermic reaction. And that was found to induce like second-degree burns to the people it was applied to. Not all of them, but enough. So you got some tissue damage in addition to the primary trauma. And they tweaked it a little bit. They decreased the percentage of zeolite used so it made less of a exothermic reaction and limited the temperature to like 140 degrees. And then they abandoned zeolite altogether and started using kaolin. And for quite a few years now, quick clot has only used kaolin, which is non-exothermic. And as I said before, it works systemically. So you really don't have to worry about that sort of thing.
So there's a whole lot of equipment available. What sort of things just aren't useful for someone like me?
You have to ask yourself what your priorities are. And if your priorities are saving a life, then that's what you limit your stuff to. There's a whole lot of nice-to-have stuff. It may be practical, and it may be useful, but if you're trying to go with small and light, then by necessity, you have to limit your choices and prioritize your choices. So you have to, things like splints, for example. And splints are nice, but you go start putting splints in your trauma bag, and you're going to wind up with a trauma bag that's too darn heavy to carry, and it's just like carrying the 44 Magnum pistol. Yeah, it'll probably stop a bear, but it's not something you're going to carry every day. So, you know, the best self-defense weapon is the one that you can carry and practice with on a regular basis. Well, the best first aid kit is the one that you're willing to carry with you and know what all the how to use all the contents therein. So keep it small, keep it light. You don't need splints. Splints are, by definition, something to apply when the life threats have been managed. As a layperson, that's all you really need to worry about, life-threatening injuries. Worry about the life-threatening injuries. Keep the patient still. If you're lying flat on your back, still on the ground, then every bone in your body is splinted. If you have to splint something, you can make use of the materials that are around you. Popsicle sticks, the patient's own limbs. You know, if they got a broken arm, you can strap one arm to the other and stabilize that pretty darn well, or strap their arm to their side. A belt can make an effective splint. You can use a rolled up magazine. You can use a pillow. A broken wrist or a broken ankle or foot, broken hand, those kind of things work great with a pillow. Wrap their extremity up in a pillow with the digit sticking out so you can check blood flow. Tape the heck out of that sucker and boom, you've got it splinted. So you don't need to carry all that stuff around you, but there are splinting options that are small enough to be carried in a fairly small pack. A SAM splint is a malleable aluminum splint that you can roll up, and it's probably as big as a good sized coffee mug. You can put that in your kit, but you really don't need to go beyond that. I would suggest that you have wound care supplies, some simple 4x4 gauze pads. You need a absorbent trauma dressing with some type of a fixing device. There are a number of them out there. There's one called the Seteroth Blood Stopper that works well. The older versions are the Israeli Battle Bandage or something along those lines, which basically just consists of the bandage. The bandage is what you apply directly to the wound, and the dressing is what affixes the bandage to the wound. And it's integrated in those types of trauma dressings. So you just put it on, tie it off, or wrap it off, and you're good to go. You need a tourniquet. You need probably a chest seal. There's a number of them out there. Halo seals, Asherman seals, SAM medical seals. I would recommend that if you have a seal in your bag, you get a vented chest seal. A vented chest seal will allow excess air to escape. One of the problems with putting a seal on someone on a sucking chest wound, for example, is air escapes from the injured lung. And if it has no way to escape to the outside, you wind up with air building up under pressure in the chest cavity. And that will eventually collapse the injured lung and start shifting the heart and great vessels off to one side in a condition known as a tension pneumothorax. You know, and an open chest wound will definitely compromise you and impair your breathing and contribute to shock, but it is not the killer that a tension pneumothorax is. So to prevent yourself having to go back and recheck and burp a chest seal like you would a Tupperware dish, just buy a vented chest seal that allows for that already. And besides that, I really can't think of much of anything else. You know, chest seal, tourniquet, wound care supplies, CPR pocket mask, and go take a Heart Saver first aid CPR course that deals with those things. And you'll learn how to do CPR, learn how to use an AED, and learn how to do basic wound care and splinting if necessary. And that's really all you need. A day of your time and $150, $200 worth of equipment. You've got everything you possibly need for most life-threatening emergencies.
All right, Kelly, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again soon.
Sean, it was great talking to you again. And remember, man, keep the shiny side up, the rubber side down. And if you see me behind you with the flashy lights, please, please pull to the right.
Ride along with Kelly at his blog, theambulancedriverfiles.com, and pick up his book, En Route, A Paramedic's Stories of Life, Death, and Everything in Between, available at amazon.com.
Tiffany's back with her first after-action report of the NRA Carry Guard Expo in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're going to love her off-the-cuff interview with her Uber driver.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. Did you climb inside of his skin? Walk around in it.
Hey folks, Tiffany here. Sorry I missed you guys last week. It was the first week of classes at the university where I teach, and it was the week from hell. So, so I was MIA for a bit, but as you hopefully will recall, last time I talked to you all, I was eagerly anticipating the NRA Carry Guard Expo. And I promised you all that I would return with an AAR, so here I am. What happened is I ended up kind of recording myself occasionally throughout the weekend using my phone. So again, apologies for the audio quality, which isn't great all the time, but I just made sort of an audio diary anytime something occurred to me that I wanted to say out loud. And the first was an interesting event at the airport. And then the second was an even more interesting encounter with my Uber driver, whose name is Ivy. Total stranger, just met him when I jumped in his car for a ride. Big guy, hometown Madison dude. And we ended up talking about the expo, and he was kind enough to allow me to record an interview with him. So altogether, I think I ended up with, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 short little recordings, starting with these first few from day one, and also including an interview that I did with one of the protesters at the NRA Carry Guard. There was a huge protest outside, and I had the luxury of speaking to one of said protesters. So I'll have that coming up. Look forward to that in future weeks. But for now, let's just get me out of the airport and have a little chat with Ivy the Uber driver. Well, here I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I've got a couple hours to kill for check-in time at the hotel. Maybe I'll find some trouble to get into. So let me go find the baggage office and grab my bags, which of course will be zipped up with zip ties, since I'm one of the special people, I guess. And they don't want me to access any equipment, so it's gonna be zip tied, because you know nothing stops a mass shooting like a zip tie. Let's hop to it. Okay, so the coolest thing just happened, and I had to tell you about it. I just went to the Delta baggage office to grab my bag, and of course, because I've declared unloaded firearms, they have to wrap it in a zip tie, like I was just talking about, so I'm always expecting to be conspicuous walking out of the airport with a giant zip tie around my backpack. But anyway, I get there and there's no zip tie. I'm like, what's the deal? No zip tie? Ha ha ha. And he goes, no, we trust you now. I said, oh, you trust me? He's like, no, I'm just kidding. We're out of zip ties. There are so many people arriving here with checked firearms that the airport has run out of zip ties. Now, if that ain't America, then I don't know what is. So I am now even more excited about this weekend than I was before. More updates to come. So I'm chilling in the Uber right now and having a cool conversation with my Uber driver. Sir, what's your name?
Ivy. Ivy Moore.
Ivy Moore. All right. So as you know, I'm here in Milwaukee for the NRA Carry Guard Expo. Have you heard about the expo?
Yes, I've heard about it. I really don't think it's going to hit off like you guys want. I'm quite sure the Caucasians might involve themselves in that entity, but any other race here, they're not going to fall for it.
So I shouldn't expect to see a whole bunch of black people at the expo is what you're trying to tell me.
Yes, not at all. Not at all.
Interesting. So you know that Carry Guard is not just insurance, it's also about personal protection and self-defense. Did you know that?
Yes, but we're pretty much protected.
When you say we, who do you mean?
Black people.
How are black people protected in Milwaukee?
We have a problem with our youth not being aware or knowing that the violence that they caused amongst each other in our neighborhoods we just don't stand for it.
So if violence did come to your neighborhood, do you think you'd have the right to protect yourself?
Yes, yeah.
You sound like you're equivocating a little bit. Are you hesitant about that? Are you unsure?
I'm sure, but it's kind of weird because protecting yourself from someone could also cause you to be incarcerated.
Do you think that if you protected yourself lawfully and someone had unlawfully entered your home and attacked you, that you would still be incarcerated?
Here in Wisconsin? Yes.
You think that's true of everybody, or you mean you personally?
Me as a black man, yes, we would end up in jail.
So you think that the outcome would be different for a black person in the same situation versus a white person here?
Can I swear?
Sure.
Hell yeah.
What makes you think that?
There's no way that the Milwaukee public municipal system will allow a black man to go free today if someone protected themselves. There's no way. They will find some reason to lock that person up.
But what is it that makes you think that? Like, what's your evidence for that theory?
A lot of people say there's no such thing of racism. Racism is still living today in Wisconsin police and in the court system and on the streets.
Is there a specific incident or an example that you can think of that convinced you that the police would treat a black person differently if that black person were acting in self-defense?
Okay, situation.
I mean, a real event that happened where you were like, see, they didn't give him a fair shake.
I don't remember this guy, little guy name, stayed around the corner from me. His mom was being beaten up by her boyfriend in the house. And the son actually shot the guy. He's in jail right now with 8 years.
The son is?
Yes, because he said he shot the guy. He didn't shoot the guy in the back. He shot the guy. I think he shot him in his leg, but the guy didn't die. And he still went to jail. And it was self-defense, but he still went to jail.
What do you think the NRA could do differently to change the attitude of folks in the black community when it comes to guns and the right to self-defense in situations like the one that you just described? Is there any role that the NRA can play to make things better?
Okay, like with a felon. If a person committed a crime, he do the time that he was committed to do years down the line, he should be able to receive his right to carry. Now, that's just like today, a person that's a felon, he can't protect himself. So he's opened up to anything. I mean.
So would you like to see the NRA be more active in restoration of rights for people who've done their time and are eligible to have their rights restored under the Second Amendment? Is that something you think the NRA should get more involved in?
Yes, for sure, for sure. I think it's the Second Amendment. I love guns. I mean, for hunting and to protect myself. I mean, who really want to shoot someone? I mean, you really would have to put my family in danger in order for me to actually take someone's life. But otherwise, I mean, guns don't kill people. People kill people.
What a perfect note to end on. That's wonderful. Sir, I know you are working. I won't keep you any longer. Thank you for letting me do this interview. Appreciate it.
For sure.
So to me, one of the most interesting things about talking to Ivy was, you know, he's just a regular guy. He is not bathed in the usual bumper sticker style arguments pro or against firearms. And his sentiments were really kind of grassroots. And at the end of the day, even without any formal training or education in personal defense, we arrived at the same destination. His bottom line was, hey, I have no interest in killing anyone, but if they pose a mortal threat to my family, then I'm willing to do what I have to do, and every person has that right. And he also arrived completely on his own, mind you. I did not prompt him to say this, but he arrived at the conclusion that, you know, guns don't kill people. They're just tools. So I guess the moral of the story is, you know, even though he might have been misinformed or underinformed on some of the facts of past events that might now be coloring his opinions about the police, and even though he might have rushed to judgment about some of those events, despite knowing relatively little of the facts, hey, that makes him very much like 80% of the people on Facebook who claim to have expertise in the area of firearms or police-citizen relations or things like that, you know? So I hope that was as interesting to you as it was to me. I'll try and pull together a few of these other recordings that I made and put them into next week's segment. But until then, hunker down in the wake of these hurricanes. I hope everybody in Texas and Florida is weathering the storms as well as could be expected. But you all stay safe, keep it centered and even, and I will talk to you next week.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
Cerakote is a polymer ceramic composite coating that can be applied to metals, plastics, polymers, and wood. It's also what will take your plain Jane firearm from basic to full custom. Whether you want a handgun coated in just a single color, your hunting rifle camouflaged for your specific environment, or your competition pistol sprayed in purple, white, and black Carolina Cryptic, you want Carolina ceramic coating to do the job. Bud and his team of skilled technicians will carefully disassemble and clean your firearm, professionally apply the Cerakote in your choice of colors and patterns, and return your firearm to you in perfect working order. And they also do auto engine parts. When I wanted my competition handgun Cerakoted, I trusted Carolina Ceramic Coating, and you should too. Check out their work on Instagram. Search at CerakoteNC. That's at CERAKOTENC. Or go to CarolinaCeramicCoating.com. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
Hello, preppers. This is Erin. I am exhausted because I have been making Hurricane Irma preparations for the last few days, and I am just stupid tired right now, and I'm not done. So this is the second hurricane that I have lived through, experienced. I don't know what the proper word is right now. Hopefully Sean can edit this to make me sound a little more eloquent, but there are, of course, some obvious parallels to Matthew in the predicted hurricane track, and there are some differences. But the biggest difference for me that I can tell is that Matthew, we knew was coming, but we didn't know exactly if it would hit or not until that one day. I think it was a Friday, maybe a Thursday. And then, you know, I got up and I checked the weather and it was, holy crap, it's coming right for us. And that was a big change because that went from, I'm worried that it might happen to, okay, it's definitely coming. And I didn't really have a lot of time to think about it. I just packed up my stuff and I got the heck out of Dodge. And so the decision was made for me, pretty much. Irma is different because if you've been watching the spaghetti models, the cone of uncertainty is huge. It encompasses the entire state of Florida. I really wish the weather forecasters would just call it Hurricane LOL if I know. Because for the longest time, that's what they were doing. I mean, Irma was supposed to thread the needle between Florida and Cuba and go into the Gulf. And then it wasn't. And then it was going to go up the Gulf Coast and hit Tampa. And then it was going to turn east and go up the East Coast. And then it was going to hit Miami and then East Coast and then Miami. And right now it looks like it's going to go straight up the tip of Florida. And that's bad for Miami. But honestly, it doesn't really matter where Irma hits Miami, whether it comes in from the East Coast or it comes up from the tip. Miami is pretty much f***ed at this point. But it's this uncertainty that has made this year's preparations for evacuation a lot harder. Because I don't want to go. It's a massive pain in the ass to pack up all my stuff. And I'm leaving stuff behind. I am leaving behind hundreds of dollars of ammunition. I am leaving behind all sorts of electronic equipment. I mean, this is my home. I've lived here for way too long. And then, of course, my family lives here, and they're not leaving. And, you know, my dogs are here, and my parents are hanging on to them. Well, technically, they're my parents' dogs, but I look after them, so they're mine, too. And so, it's really hard to leave all this stuff. I feel like I have to, but it's this lack of certainty that's bugging me. Like I said, with Matthew, it was coming right for us. The decision was made. It was get out or die, and I chose to get out. And I was on an adrenaline rush pretty much the entire time. This, I've had days to see it coming, and I've watched the models, and I've experienced the high and the low of, it's going to miss us. No, it's not. Maybe, no, it will. Even now, I've got this feeling that if I leave, it might turn out to be nothing at all. And okay, that's really no harm done, but it is expensive to relocate. And I don't want to go through all this hassle if I don't have to. On the other hand, there's also this feeling I have that if I don't leave, it'll be the last decision I ever make. By the time I know for certain, it will probably be too late to leave. I'll have a better idea of what's going on Friday morning. You know, hurricane predictions, well, they're crap, to be honest. It's all guessing. I mean, look at Hurricane Matthew. It was supposed to come right into Daytona Beach as a Category 4. Instead, it rather miraculously veered north and just scraped along the coast as a Category 3, which is great, but we didn't predict that. We won't know, really, until it's too late for me to leave. And I don't want to be in that position. So I am dragging my feet, to be perfectly honest. I could have theoretically left today if I had gotten off my rear end and done all my packing yesterday. But I just kept hoping that something would change, that Irma would change her course or reduce in intensity or something. And it's getting down to the wire, and it looks like I have to do the thing that I don't want to do. And that's making this really hard. Because I'm looking around at my house and I'm going, I may never see this again. I may never see my parents again. I may never pet my dogs again. It's really a hard thing. I don't know what's going to happen if I don't have a house to come back to. I don't know what I'm going to do if I lose my family. It sucks, you know? I'm as prepared for this as I can be, but this still doesn't prepare you, you know? I mean, you can have all the plans ready. You can know what you're going to do. But still, you aren't ready for that emotional gut punch. You just got to live through it. I don't know how many times. Maybe you never get over it. I don't know. Here's what I've learned from my hurricane preparations. If you are prepping as part of a family, You unfortunately need to prep for everyone else as well. My dad is in his 80s, my mom is in her late 70s, and they are missing things. They aren't thinking of things. I spent way too much time trying to get gas yesterday because mom let it get down to a quarter tank. And I'm going, Mom, I got gas for Dad on Saturday. Why didn't you bring this up before? And I just could have gotten gas for you too. And she didn't know. Unless you're dealing with people and you know that they have their act together, just understand that you're probably going to handle the preps for other people. If you have children, you definitely have to handle their preps. If you have elderly parents, you have to double check and make sure they haven't forgotten things. Two, well, don't procrastinate. I have been procrastinating. I probably will procrastinate a bit more. I still haven't figured out where I'm going to go. I have many offers. Sean has offered to take me in at his place up in North Carolina. I still might do that. I don't know. But that's an additional 100 miles to go. And I recall, again with Matthew, that they lost power for, I don't know, 3 days, something like that. I don't want to have to drive all the way up there and then just lose power up there. I could drive into Atlanta, but God, I have to deal with Atlanta again. Oh my God. I invented new curse words for dealing with Atlanta traffic during the NRA convention this year. It's just really, really bad. And I just don't want to deal with that again, in addition to all the other stress I'm dealing with. And apparently, there's a lot of traffic going on. Gee, you know, it's almost like a city of 6 million people, plus however many are in the Keys and other parts of South Florida, are evacuating. So there's a lot of congestion. So that leads me to my next point. You really have to keep an eye on traffic and know what your alternate routes are. I'm not going to tell you what my alternate routes are, but I'm going to tell you I am not taking the interstate. I am taking state roads. It'll be slower. See, that's the thing. State roads are slower than a clear interstate, but they're faster than a gridlocked interstate. That's what I'm doing. So you need to have alternate routes planned, and you also need to make sure that those alternate routes aren't clogged by traffic either. I've heard that Google Maps is updating traffic jams in real time. That's great. So if you have that on your phone, use it. There's another useful utility I just found out about today. It's called Florida 511, and it is set up by, I believe, the Florida Department of Transportation, and it tracks traffic jams and suggests alternate routes. Between that and Google Maps and Waze, there are all sorts of ways to figure out, all right, I can't go this route, I can go this other route, and you should use those. There's a Georgia version of the 511, and there's a South Carolina version of the 511 on Google Play, probably in iTunes as well, I don't know. They don't have them for every state, but hey, they've got them for the states I'm going to, so rock on. And finally, hurricane shutters. If you live in Florida and you've gone through these storms, there are several ways to protect your windows. The most common way is for people to put up plywood. I am not a big fan of that because plywood is cheap and it breaks and you have to drill holes into your house and then you got to patch the holes. What my family did was to buy aluminum storm shutters. And so that's metal. That's great. Stronger than wood. Doesn't require drilling holes. Well, okay, technically it does, but these are called mountings, and the mountings stay up permanently. So all you have to do is just fit them in place and then tighten the wing nut. So they're stronger, they're better than plywood, but let me tell you, putting up storm shutters for 11 f***ing windows is a real pain. It's a physical pain. There's all this lifting and forcing the shutters into place and tightening them all down. I am sore all over. And bitten by bugs and scratched by plants. Ugh. So my big advice to you is if you have a home in Florida and you're going to get hurricane shutters, spend the extra money to get the motorized kind. And they come down just like a little miniature garage door. It's fast. It's easy. You don't have to do work. Yeah, there's a little drawback in that you can't raise them without power. But oh my God, just the amount it will make your life easier. Just do it. Do it, do it, do it. And if you have to retrofit them, well, I think they're worth it. And I've had to put these suckers up more times than I can think. I mean, at least as far back as Hurricane Andrew, which was, what, 92? I am so sick of this. Just spend the money, be lazy. It takes me hours to put up these storm shutters. And if I needed to put them up for some sort of urban unrest, I mean, it's highly unlikely that a riot is going to come through my sleepy little neighborhood. If we just need to protect things, if you've got power, yep, you can put them down in an instant. Meanwhile, if you're putting up the kinds of storm shutters we have by hand, it's taking you several hours. That is not a good thing if unrest is imminent. So if you live in a really dense, populated part of town like the city, you know, if you live deep in Miami where you've got all this crime, you might want to have those shutters for more than storms. So, yeah, get them. Highest recommendation, because I'm tired and I'm lazy. This is Aaron Paulette signing off. I will be on the road tomorrow unless something miraculous happens with the storm. And like last time, I will be posting my progress on Facebook using my smartphone. Everyone who is worried about me, who has asked about me, thank you so much. Your concern is wonderful. I appreciate that. I am getting out of Dodge. It's just taken me a bit longer, and some of that's my own fault. But hey, the storm isn't supposed to get us until Sunday night, Monday morning, and I'm leaving Friday. I'll be okay. So thank you all for your concern, for your kind words, for your prayers. I'll let you know where I land, and hopefully I'll have a home to come back to. If you're the praying type, please pray for my family's safety. Hey guys, it's Aaron. It's Saturday afternoon as I record this, which means that I'm safe at Sean's house in North Carolina. It took me over 12 hours to drive here, arriving around 1:30 this morning. Traffic wasn't bad in Florida, but it became progressively worse the further north I went, with most of South Carolina being stop and go across even state roads. Hurricane Irma is supposed to hit Florida Sunday morning, but between when I left and now, it shifted west in a major way. It looks like the east coast of Florida, where I live, will be spared, but things now look much worse for the Gulf Coast. If you're the praying type, say a little prayer for Miguel in Miami, which is going to be hit by the strongest part of the storm, and for our theme music composer Rob Allen in Tampa, which is in the direct path of Irma's eye. While South and West Florida prepares for the worst, we're all hoping for the best. Hunker down and stay dry, Florida.
I talk about it nearly every episode, the Kellerman Study. This week, I look into the most important piece of anti-gun scientific research.
In This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
Almost every week, you hear me shouting out, Kellerman Study! I'm referencing a 1993 scientific study on violent crime published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It is by far the most cited scientific justification for gun control, even nearly a quarter century after it was published. What did the study conclude?
Back in the early 90s, the Centers for Disease Control was funding plenty of research into gun safety. The studies found that people in homes with guns had a higher likelihood of violent death in the home than people in homes without guns.
Wow. I think you can see why this study might be so interesting.
Rivara is the guy, along with Dr. Arthur Kellerman, who found the conclusion that today has become almost a cliche in the debate. If you have a gun in the home, you're actually less safe on average than if you don't.
He's talking about Dr. Frederick Rivara, who's the second author in the paper in question.
We found out that having the gun in a home was associated with a significant increase, about a threefold increase in the risk of homicide occurring in the home from any means.
Wow! Should I, like, be destroying all my guns? Of course, that's what the antis want.
In other words, a gun kept in the home was 43 times more likely to be involved in the death of a member of the household than to be used in self-defense.
That's Dr. Arthur Kellerman, the lead author of the same paper. Wait, what is it, threefold or 43-fold? That's a huge discrepancy.
Kellerman found people turn those guns on themselves and others in the house far more often than on intruders.
Are we talking about different things here? Rivara was talking about homicide in the home, while Kellerman is talking about death of a member of the household. Is Kellerman lumping suicides into his interview?
The most common reason that people have a gun is because they have it for home protection. They feel like it is important to protect themselves and their family from harm. Unfortunately, the data indicate that having a gun in the home is associated with both an increased risk of homicide, but even more importantly, an increased risk of suicide.
Nope. Rivara is trying to claim that guns somehow cause suicide. Also, the discrepancies on how dangerous a gun in the home is quite consistent throughout interviews with Dr. Kellerman. He practically cites a different number every time he gives a statement.
We know that, for example, if there's a gun in the home, that the risk of suicide among adolescents and young adults is increased tenfold.
This is total crap. Guns do not cause suicide. It's easily provable. It's indisputed that the United States has some of the most permissive gun laws in the world. And our people are heavily armed and buying more guns at record rates. Yet, as a nation, our suicide rate is about the middle of the road. Places like Japan, who have all but banned firearms for private possession, have vastly higher suicide rates than ours. And the UK has a rate about the same as ours, while having insanely strict gun laws. Further, places like Massachusetts, who have made it very difficult and expensive for citizens to own guns, favor hanging and/or suffocation as a means to ending their own lives, rather than firearms. But let's dive into this study. It sampled homicides in households in three high-population, high-crime counties in the United States, from 1987 through 1992. It looked at death in a residence or surrounding property, not public spaces. It only counted an instance as self-defense if the police ruled that the dead body found on the property was a legally justified homicide. It made no controls for what either party in these violent encounters were doing before the homicide. Let's look at how the books were cooked. Using data only from high population and high crime areas, you're going to skew the sample to criminal and criminal violence. Note that as there were no controls for who the victims and the killers were, a gangland raid on a rival drug dealer would be considered a gun-owning home that had a murder. Not only were things like concealed carry permits not looked at, in one of the three areas studied, Tennessee, concealed carry was illegal for the bulk of the study window. And Ohio was may issue. And there's a strong chance that the sample county, Cuyahoga, probably didn't issue many permits. While the two authors talk a lot about members of the household when talking about people falling victims to a gun in the home, the bulk of the relationship between the killer and victim was friend or acquaintance. I'm going out on a limb here to say that a person killing me really isn't my friend, so the bulk must be associates. Who's an associate? Well, if you're a gang member or a drug dealer, it's a rival gang member or drug dealers, as well as junkies. And all of this weighed against the likelihood of self-defense, which only occurs when the attacker is killed on the property. If the guy dies on the sidewalk or dies in an ambulance or a stretcher at the local hospital, it doesn't count. Same with if the person is only wounded, fired upon but missed, or was simply faced with a gun and retreated or surrendered. Ironically, defensive gun uses where no shots were fired have been reported at over 90% of all defensive gun uses in the country. So anti-gunners love this study because it claims that having guns in the home makes us less safe and therefore advocates for the removal of privately held guns for the public good. But the study is so skewed in its methods and conclusions that this just isn't reality. What was the public reaction?
And although gun injury prevention research was never more than a tiny percentage of the CDC's research budget, it was enough to bring them under the fire of the NRA.
Well, it's probably such a tiny fraction because the Center for Disease Control probably has no business looking at guns.
Lawmakers, both Democrats and Republicans, held back some money from the Centers for Disease Control and made clear no federal funds should be used to promote gun control.
This is the Dickey Amendment, and it was good law. Not only are guns and violent crime not a part of what the CDC studies, but no part of the federal government should be pushing to uproot the individual liberties of U.S. citizens.
Personally, it was really a frightening time. I can remember back in those days, 20 years ago, when we were really frightened about what was going to happen to our injury research program, what was going to happen to us personally, because it did feel as a personal attack.
You felt personally attacked when you published a study that, number one, viewed a crack dealer with a stolen pistol exactly the same as a lawful citizen with a concealed carry permit and a legally owned firearm, and number two, declared that person a menace to public health simply because they owned a gun, and number three, your cooked study was used as a rallying cry for civilian disarmament and confiscation of lawfully held property in America during the darkest days of the Second Amendment in U.S. history. Man, I'm so sorry you felt personally attacked for that.
I think it was in one way frightening in that people would criticize you so vehemently about your work. On the other hand, it was also good because it told us that we were doing important work.
Well, given that it was 24 years ago this October that your paper was published, and it's still being cited as one of the few pieces of anti-gun scientific research, it really was an important piece. It was also a farce and a bad faith argument.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Plug of the week, Smuggler's Notch Litigation Wheat Whiskey.
So while I was up in Maine, my wife was actually at a family obligation up in Vermont, and she decided she had a little extra time, so she decided to stop by Smuggler's Notch Distillery. She said, do you want anything? And I'm like, because some of these micro distilleries, the stuff's really good. Some of it's not so great. And my wife doesn't really drink. And so I said, that's kind of like me going to an art show. Yeah, that looked pretty. But she picked this up. This one looked really interesting to me. It's called their Litigation Wheat Whiskey. It's made with wheat and malted barley, and it's aged in white oak barrels. So the end note is kind of like an American style rye got married to a single malt scotch. It's a very, very interesting tasting whiskey. And if you like rye and or scotch, I think you'll like this stuff.
All right. A quick reminder, join Gunblog Varietycast Radio Group on Facebook. On October 1, I will select one of you to receive your very own cat tourniquet. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that Gunblog Varietycast Radio is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode160.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Varietycast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.